Welcome to Rebecca Sounds Reveille. This is an exciting show because today we are going to illuminate a guest who is a United States Navy veteran. He is also an artist, a singer, a songwriter, recording artist, a performer, and he is the owner of Swing Samurai Music. With me today, my guest has released 4 albums, and I've got to tell you, they are pretty exciting. One of them is In California Country, Mended Fences, Where We Come From, and most recently, and we're going to talk about that, Can You Feel This? What a timing for that to come out, I've got to tell you. He's been nominated for a number of Song of the Year awards, and he has also been involved with a lot of bands. We're going to talk about that also, but he has also been on a number of compilations. One of them is Volume 1 of Keeping It Country. He's worked all over the San Fernando Valley in California, and I've got to tell you, what's really fascinating is he has immersed himself in blues and Americana, and he's gravitated towards music and poetry. A lot of wordsmiths like Dylan and Dr. Seuss may come to mind for you, but it has for him, along with Yeats, and he has mended all of those things together to blend, well, country, blues, folk, rock, a sound that is sort of between Hank Williams and Cowboy Junkies. You're gonna love this. And we're gonna talk with him today. But what's really exciting is he's been working with a producer by the name of Max Allen, who recently signed him with All's Well Records. So with, and that's an imprint out of Nashville. So with me, without any further ado, I'm going to bring to you with us, my guest, none other than Ray William Roldan. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I am absolutely excited to have you on the show because you have done so much with everything that you've done. You've been immersed in so many things and it has taken you so many different places. But I want to talk with you first about how you started out with what you have done, because you have such an incredible background. Can you tell me how you first started out with an outlaw biker dad and a 16-year-old mother in California?
Well, my mother at the time was going to Hollywood High, and she was walking to the library. She was a senior, or maybe 11th grade. Anyhow, my father pulled up in a black Cadillac, it said, and convertible, and, you know, this Cuban biker, you know, tattooed guy, and this is in the 50s, and kind of much to the dismay of my grandfather, swept her away, and they eloped a few weeks later and, you know, ran off. And a couple years later, I was born.
And exciting.
Yeah, it was a very tumultuous relationship, and he raced cars and motorcycles and definitely was an outlaw biker, you know. And they ended up with 4 kids, and then he passed when I was a little after I was 5 years old, and left me the oldest of 4 kids. And, you know, and then we went from there. We ended up coming back to California, spent about 8 years on and off homeless, living in hotel rooms and in the car. And, you know, it was a real tough, until I finally, you know, left home and joined the Navy. I was like, okay, I've had enough.
I am so sorry. That that is a challenging childhood.
Yeah.
But you've come a long way since then, because you've utilized all of those things to lift you higher and to do something that has made you quite successful now.
Yes. Well, I learned what I didn't want to be and where I didn't want to be. And I think that's really important for people. It's something to go through. And I also learned that I wasn't a victim. That I could have a choice and in whatever I was doing. This took me, you know, a few years, trust me. I had to really self-reflect and study philosophies and do a lot of things over the years to get to a point where I could go, oh wait, you know, I'm not a victim. I'm being a victim will not help me. Will not empower me. It will not, you know, and that's kind of how I looked at it, you know. Not that I haven't made mistakes, but, you know, I inevitably, became a father at the age of 34, and my son is my heart. He's 27 and a musician. And for me, that was a healing. A really huge healing process, because I found that I could, in loving him, I could heal what I didn't get. You know, I could, it really helped me. And that is the gift you get from something like that. It's not resenting or hating or anything like that. It's really the process of overcoming and giving love, you know, is what really makes a big difference. So, I mean, that's my soapbox.
Well, you've actually said some very powerful things in all of those things that you just said. Overcoming a victim mentality, making choices, and giving love. Those are three huge things that I think that the audience really needs to embrace, because all of those things will make an absolute shift in the direction of someone's life.
Yes. Oh yeah. It's kind of like opening the curtains in a dark room. You know, you realize that, hey, it's just the room that's dark. You know, you open the curtains and the light comes in. I mean, I've been lucky. I've been an artist my whole life. My grandfather was, after my father passed, my grandfather was my mentor, but then he passed it at when I was 12. And I happened to be staying with him when he passed, when they took him to the hospital. I was with him right, you know, close to the last. And that really knocked me down for a while. But once again, what that did was his loving me, it taught me how powerful loving somebody is, how powerful it is to not even being loved, but to love people, to love your kids, to love your wife, or your, you know, that doesn't always mean that you're going to have a successful relationship, or you're not going to. You're of course going to have ups and downs in anything you do, but it is the axiom, the main thing that I learned, that what I can fall back on. Years ago, I someone, you know, said, "How did you learn to be a parent?" And I said, "I really didn't, because I didn't have any." But the only one thing I knew, no matter what, was if I loved my kid, regardless of making mistakes or anything, or should I let him do this? Should I not let him do that? If I always knew that I loved my kid and I showed that, that was the one thing I knew I was doing right, regardless of anything else. So, you know.
No, what you say is absolutely so powerful. Love is huge. And I think oftentimes we forget that giving it sometimes is more rewarding than getting it. And so oftentimes people seek out, I have to get this boyfriend, girlfriend, and they find that they are unhappy when they're in this unhealthy relationship. And so then they go on to the next one and it happens again and they end up in this cycle. But aside from talking about that, because you've really laid out a huge, I hope that someone that is listening to this will go back and listen to this again and again, what you've just said, because you've laid out some very, very important points. And if they listen to this and it really begins to be absorbed and applied, it will make a huge difference. But aside from that, you've taken all of those things. These were very, very hard things that you came by, and you began to use them and express them through music. And I know that these are things that you've helped other people change through their listening to what you have shared through your own. I know when we write, it's an expression of what we have either experienced or we are feeling or both. So how did you get on this journey where you started playing and performing in front of others?
Well, it's interesting. I've always been an artist. I've been a sculptor and I drew for years. I've always been an artist. My grandfather started teaching me to watercolor and to draw when I was very young. He started me with drum lessons. He was a swing drummer out of Chicago out of the 30s. And he was also an artist, and he came out to Hollywood in the, I guess, the late 40s, early 50s. My grandmother danced Broadway and off-Broadway. This is my mother's parents. And so there was this whole show business thing, but they were also the show business people that didn't make it. They didn't become super successful out of it. And, you know, they had their issues and stuff. But I always had that in my blood. And the first part of my life, I spent more of it drawing and sculpting and things like that. And then later on, side note, when I was a kid, I used to hang out at the drugstore reading a magazine called Hit Parade. And Hit Parade was a magazine that came out every week with all the lyrics to the latest songs. And yes. I just read and read and read and learned all these songs. And I think it must have sunk in, because I never did well in school. I joined the Navy out of 10th grade. I didn't, because I had a rough life as a kid, so I did not do well in school. So I didn't really learn proper grammar, proper English, you know, things like that. That came later. I had to teach myself that. But lyrics and stories were always very important to me. So, you know, I did that, all that as a kid, but I never really, it wasn't until I was much older that I realized that I had the ability to write. And to write poetry and stories and songs. And then basically a friend of mine, at one point, I had been playing harmonica, blues harmonica for years, with people, but, you know, just little things. And then a friend of mine needed a vocalist in his band, and I had terrible stage fright. So we would be in the recording in his recording studio, and I would stand outside the door with the mic while the band was inside and a pair of headphones, because I was too embarrassed to sing in front of anybody.
Oh, wow.
Which is cool, because he's kind of the catalyst. He was a contractor friend of mine, and he was kind of like, hey, we need this singer, why don't you try it? And that's kind of how it kind of worked for me. And then I also went to acting classes for a couple years to just make myself feel comfortable in front of people, to speak and play and show myself. I didn't accept myself as that kind of an artist until much later. I wouldn't tell someone I'm a musician or I'm an artist. They would see my guitars and they'd say, "Hey, what? Why don't you play that?" And I would, you know. So it was a process.
That's actually a good point that I want to make too to the audience. Is oftentimes people think if I go to acting classes, that means that I want to go into the acting field or I want to be on camera. And I want to point out right here too that that also is not necessarily the case. You can take it because you want to feel more confident in the things that you do in interacting with other people, or if you have to be in business and go on stage or do a presentation. These are things that are confidence building skills and will also show you interpersonal skills. And there's just so much more to this. And I just wanted to bring that out because this is a good point that you've made.
Yeah, it was very cool because it teaches you how to see yourself. So when you're up on stage or whatever you're doing, because before that, one problem with stage fright is you have some weird idea of what you must look like to everybody. And what this teaches you is how to see yourself in a realistic way, you know, without the critical thoughts and everything else. And it was very cool for me. I mean, I was literally, you know, acting and performing with like Broadway artists and you name it, and well-trained people. And I'm self-taught through, you know, but the one thing that my Gary Imhoff was my acting teacher, and he said, you're very good. You just be you, just be natural. And that's, I thought, well, I could do that, you know? So, you know, that's what I did. And it really helped a lot. And, you know, and it still takes doing a lot of shows, like getting in front of people, because it's still nerve-wracking, you know, people to be happy. That was my biggest problem, is I was so stuck on, oh, are they happy? Am I doing a good job? Am I wasting their time? But that's not really how you should approach it. You want to do it. You want to feel good about what you're, just do it. And then if you're feeling good and you've got some, you know what you're doing, people will enjoy it and they'll enjoy it as you enjoy it.
I love that. So you went on to not only start your own, you've got Swing Samurai Music, and you have...
Which I don't necessarily use that anymore. It's R.W. Roldan Music now.
Okay.
That was back... That came from... I was a martial artist for many years, and samurai were artists. They were masters. They could be a potter. They could be... People don't realize. They weren't just guys who swung swords. But I took samurai, and then my grandfather is a swing drummer, and who started me, and I put them together, and I came out with Swing Samurai.
I love it.
The problem is, in country music and Americana, that's a really odd title for, you know, it's hard for them to for people to understand it. So that's why I kind of stopped. I don't use that as much anymore.
Mm-hmm. So you have your albums under that, and then you...
Yes, have, three of them, yes.
Yes, you have three albums under that, and then you have now signed with All's Well. And yes, this is pretty exciting because not only that, you're on albums of compilations that oftentimes people are going, wow, this is really cool, and they don't pick up on things sometimes. And I really wanted to point this out because this is really exciting. I picked up on this one that I announced earlier at the very beginning of the show, but there's other ones with big names. Tim McGraw's one that you've been on, one of his compilations, and yeah, this goes on. But I want to talk about what you have coming out now, because especially with the climate that we're in, I think that this is really, really good time to talk a bit. Tell me a little bit about your new album?
The new album, my wife has a salon up in Topanga, California, Neil Young's old stomping ground. And one of her customers came in, and she was the wife of Max Allen, the producer. And my wife and I had gotten back together. Quick side note, my wife and I were on the streets as teenagers and then didn't see each other for 37 years. And then 6 years ago, got back together again. And she has a salon up there. Is that cool? Right? And so she introduced me to Max, and we just started, you know, spitballing and putting ideas down. And I'm a kind of a prolific writer. I write a lot of songs, and I'm always writing. And I'd done the first three albums, and I wasn't happy with them. They were a little too slick. They weren't what I heard in my head, you know. So with Max, we kept it really organic. And that was the title, Can You Feel This? I think what the artist feels should be what the audience feels. Mm-hmm. And that is a hard thing to pull off. And especially when you're putting it on a CD or on the radio and you're putting it out there, it can get lost. So that was very important to me. And the other thing we wanted to do, we decided, was it was going to go to vinyl. So we wanted to mix it so it would sound good on vinyl. And just Max and I, he's just this amazing multi-instrumentalist artist, quite a bit younger than I am. So he had his own ideas and everything. And him and I would sit, and we probably recorded about 20 songs. And we would just sit for about 4 hours in the studio for each song and just kind of suss it out, figure out where it was going to go. And then we would come back to it and, you know, finish the song. But, it allowed me, and it happened to be all these songs I wrote in Topanga in my new relationship. And we have this beautiful property up in the hills that where I filmed The Color Of. You can see me, the cars are, the old truck I'm driving is on the property. It just kind of inspired everything, being with Lauren, being in the Topanga Hills, this new producer, everything just sort of came together. I'm finally can say I'm happy with this. I would like to go farther, but I'm happy with this product, what we did. And it's as close to anything I've ever heard in my head coming out. So,
you know, that's really exciting that you say that. Not many people talk about that expression that's going on within and really being meshed with what has come out externally. Oftentimes it's just kind of, this is what's been done, we release it and we move on.
Yes.
But really, that is so crucial, because that's your masterpiece.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we do want it to be an expression of what we have created. And this is really refreshing to hear that is as close as to what's going on in there. That is really exciting.
Yes, yes. It's important to have a producer that not only listens, but has input, but he's not trying to put his stamp on it. He's trying to figure out what the best part of you is that will work, you know? So, you know, believe me, I've written many songs that I would not put out or, you know, and I have a habit, I'll just finish the song. Even if I don't like it, I'll finish the song and make it, you know. But that is the important thing, is having someone who shares your vision. You know, we did a lot of percussions. There's a song called Those Who Fall. You just put a piece of plywood on the floor. I put some nice cowboy, some of my cowboy boots on, and I I did all the percussions by tapping on the floor and miking it. And we used the lampshade as a bass drum, you know, and we did all these kind of wild things that you wouldn't know if you listened to it, but we did it very organically. And when you listen to it, you don't really know that's, unless you're a drummer, you probably don't know that's going on, but we really tried to keep things, like I said, can you feel this? It was, nothing came out of a can, you know, it was.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. And I think that with your title, there is oftentimes we don't realize how many situations that is applicable to. It's really neat. And I think you've nailed it.
Yes.
I really do. So this is really exciting. I'm excited for it to come out. And I'm really excited with where you have evolved, because I want to share too something really exciting with where you have come in the framework of a home, because you have something kind of exciting about the home that you have there. And I think you're there right now.
Yes, I'm in Silver Lake. Yes.
There's a little sort of about this that you're okay with, but some people kind of have a little story about this, and I'm wondering if you'll share that with the audience.
Well, the house we have here in Silver Lake, my wife and I were trying to plan for our retirement, you know, and so she found this house, I believe through a friend, and it was interesting because it was being sold, but it wasn't being shown anywhere. And she just happened to find out through some friends, and she called me one day and she goes, can you meet me over here in Silver Lake? We're going to look at this house. She grew up in Silver Lake. So she, this has always been kind of a neighborhood that she's been aware of. And Silver Lake is kind of southeast of Hollywood. Literally, if you're sitting on our top floor looking out the window, you see the Hollywood sign, the observatory, all of Hollywood, Century City, everything. We have this beautiful view. We're on a hill. And but this house was built by Fatty Arbuckle. And he started building it in 1910, and they finished it in 1918. And it's still probably 95% original. So it still has all the old stained glass and the plaster ceilings, really high ceiling, oak floors and everything. And, you know, but it's 110 years old, so there's work. But I spent 30 years doing construction work, building things, so I'm kind of like perfect for this situation, you know. But it's a super creative place. There's been musicians living here forever, on and off, and there's stories of, you know, Elton John stayed here, you know, the drummer from the band Hole, Courtney Love, she lived here for the past 12 years before we bought it, and with a bunch of artists living here, and she got married here to her wife, actually, on the back porch. It's in a film she did, and but it's very cool. It looks like a haunted house. It's just a really neat and a really creative place to write from. And we're going to be doing some house televised or video house concerts here. You know, not with a lot of people right now, of course, but we're going to be filming it so people can enjoy it too. But yeah, that's what this is for us.
I absolutely love this. And so I just want to share with the audience that this has been so amazing, where you have come from, where you are now, that they have the power to do the exact same thing that they have. And in the meantime, I want them to be able to connect with you audibly, visually, social media wise, everything that they can to absorb the inspiration that you can provide to them so that they can move forward in the same direction that you have. Can you share some of the links that you have that they can connect with you, get a hold of your music and other things, and just be able to begin to take hold of all of this and move in the same direction that you did through you?
Well, I appreciate that. We've just built the rwroldan.com is my website. If you Google R.W. Roldan or Ray William Roldan, which is my full name, I'm all over the place. I'm in a lot of places.
Yes, you are.
And I did all that myself. I spent many years training myself on social media and just kind of reaching out to people. And, you know, that comes from being a little shy. So it was a little easier, you know, I'm like, well, I can do this and I can reach people.
Sure.
Compilations, I found were a great way to get myself with other artists and get out there. And I've been on about 25 of them. So I really utilized that. And once again, through social media, I learned so much. You can reach people. I mean, the truth is what it's about is reaching out in any way you can and getting and helping people and getting help yourself and asking for help. That's what it's really about. And realizing that you deserve help. Everybody does. And being willing to just be open to it, you know. And so Reverb Nation, Facebook, I'm kind of on everywhere. If you look, you know, for my name, I have YouTube. I have several videos. I have The Color Of, which is the video a song I wrote on racism, which is in my latest album. And, you know, my family on my dad's side came from Cuba and from Spain before that. And my mom's side were German and English. And, you know, it's, you look at somebody and you think you know them, but you don't. You see the color of their skin, but you know nothing about them. So for me, it was important to put that,
yes,
that song out there. You know, that's kind of what I do. And though, I mean, I don't know if I clearly told you what the links were, but R.W. Roll. The guys from Allswell Records, by the way, are from the band Lifehouse. And they started their own record label and they like my music. And they're friends of Max. And that's how this all came about. So they've been very sweet and helped me with this new album, and they're just great guys. And they also have a band called Oswald, which they're just amazing music, great young cats. You know, I really like these people. And, I've been on, a few podcasts, Adam Carolla's podcast and a bunch of, you know, I kind of get around. So
this is a good thing.
Yes.
This is a really good thing. Well, I definitely am going to get your information out there. I really do want the audience to connect with you. And I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
I want to thank you. What you're doing is wonderful once again. And I really appreciate it. And I know the folks appreciate it.
Thank you so much. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in to another episode of Rebecca Sounds Reveille. Make sure that you connect with Ray on social media and all of the different venues that you can, anywhere from Facebook to LinkedIn, but also do check out anywhere you can download his information or even listen through podcasts such as Spotify. Check out Crybaby. Definitely go to his website, rwroldan.com. Also, Allswell Records, allswells records.com. And I want to ensure that I don't forget to tell you to make sure to share this with everybody you know, all your friends and family on social media, and everyone you don't. Thanks for tuning in.